This is Construction Business Mastery, episode number 5. In the fast-paced, high-tech world of construction today, 80% of the new start construction companies go broke or out of business within the first year. In 5 years, only 2% of the construction companies remain. Construction Business Mastery is dedicated to providing educational information and resources necessary for construction companies to succeed and prosper. Hello, this is Glenn Wilson, and I'll be your host for this episode of the Construction Business Mastery Podcast. This is our 5th podcast in a series of podcasts that are dedicated to helping independent and medium-sized contractors succeed and prosper in the construction industry. In this episode, we are going to continue with getting back to the basics. Last month, we talked about two very important aspects. The first was getting your company's organizational structure properly set up, and the second, getting a good accounting system for running your construction business. This month, we're going to talk about the art of estimating. In our legal section, we are going to talk about a contractor that left himself exposed after signing a purchase agreement with a supplier who limited their liability for their product. In our safety section, we're going to be talking about how buried power lines can put your construction workers at risk and how OSHA views contractors' negligence in regards to this danger. I am particularly excited about our construction quick tip this month. We will be providing a link to an outstanding estimating piece of software, and we have found a tremendous marketplace for independent and medium-sized contractors. So I think you will find both of these very helpful and interesting. Welcome to our Construction Business Mastery feature segment. I think I say this every time I begin the feature segment of our podcast, but I really can't believe that another month has gone by. And on a brighter note, I am seeing some improvement in the construction business economy. Not much, but there are some sectors of the construction marketplace that are seeing some signs of improvement. Although we are still seeing the trend of contractors bidding on work at very low bid rates. And in some cases, from the best I can tell, it is below or at their cost. This is a very dangerous practice in the construction industry. As I've always said, you can't lose money on every job and make it up in volume. This is why we need to be particularly diligent in our construction estimating practices. And we have to have a good foundation from which to build our construction estimates from. In every case in this business that I know of, we are constantly having to provide either bids or cost proposals to our clients or other contractors to be able to secure work in this marketplace. Years ago, when we used to do competitive public bid work, every time I would bid a job and find out I was the low bidder, I would be elated for about 30 seconds, and then I immediately went back and started tearing apart my estimate, trying to find out where I had made a mistake and to ensure that it was a good bid. I know we have all experienced this kind of elation and letdown when we're bidding work. As we assemble our estimates and proposals for our clients, we need to be utilizing the best tools we have to ensure the best possible outcome of our proposals and bids. I highly recommend that we use some type of computer estimating system, whether it be an Excel spreadsheet or a more sophisticated estimating system. And the primary elements we need to look at when we prepare a construction estimate are as follows. First is the cost of work. The cost of labor, materials, and subcontractors that we build into our estimates to come up with a total cost. The biggest risk in our construction business today is the cost of our labor, and we must properly estimate the amount of labor that it's going to take to do the work in time to ensure that the job is done within our labor budget. The element of labor goes back to understanding our cost and having a good accounting system that can track our cost and provide us with a good detailed history so that we can properly estimate. But there are also other factors that we need to look at and make sure that we cover that are as much a cost to the project as our labor, materials, and subcontracts. One area that I find that contractors seem to come up short on is in calculating what are called the general conditions cost of a project. These include things like the cost of securing a building permit, the cost of our cell phones now that we have become so dependent upon, the cost of our pickup trucks, not only the cost of the equipment, but the fuel that goes in them, things like temporary toilets that we need to put on a job site signs, which are a tremendous source of advertising, construction trailers, if we need them to store materials in or to provide an on-site office, and any other incidental items that we might know we need to provide to the project to facilitate the construction process. In addition to the general conditions, we also need to calculate in our cost for insurance and taxes. All of these items compile the actual cost of construction. We also then need to calculate what our overhead costs are as far as doing a particular project. That's the cost of our office, the computers in our office, our secretaries or other employees we have at the office. This is generally arrived at in a percentage basis by taking the total cost of your overhead or G&L accounts divided by your gross sales. I have seen these percentages being as low as 2 to 3% and as high as 20 to 25, 30%. The lower we control our overhead cost, the more competitive we can be in this very difficult market. And then the final and most important thing that I believe we add on to the project bid is our profit. And that's exactly how much money we want to make for the company as our return on our investment. A very wise mentor that I had years ago when I was learning to do estimating for construction imparted some very good wisdom to me, and that was that if you can sit down and look at a total project and figure out where all of the money is going to be spent in the project, including all labor, materials, subcontracts, and incidental items, and make sure that you've got money in there for every element in the project, you will have a good bid. And then once you're notified that you are the low bidder, a lot of that anxiety will go away because you will know you're not the guy that got the job because you made a mistake. Welcome to the legal section of the Construction Business Mastery Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be looking at a very interesting case where a contractor left himself exposed for liability after he signed a purchase agreement with a supplier that limited their liability. A Tennessee court has enforced a limitation of liability clause in a sales agreement. The prime contractor, who had been sued by the project owner, could not seek indemnification from the supplier of an allegedly defective product. Baptist Memorial Hospital awarded a contract to Ergo Construction Corporation for improvements to the storm drainage system at Baptist East Campus in Memphis, Tennessee. Ergo entered into a sales agreement with Hanson Pipe and Products South Incorporated. Hanson was to fabricate and supply steel-reinforced concrete pipe for the project. The sales agreement, prepared by Hanson, contained a clause entitled Limited One-Year Express Warranty, Disclaimer of All Other Warranties. For a period of 1 year after delivery, Hanson would repair or replace any defective material at its own expense or make a full refund of the purchase price. Several years after the completion of the project, a sinkhole developed in the hospital's parking lot. An investigation indicated that internal steel reinforcement in the concrete pipe had been positioned improperly, causing the pipe to fail. Baptist Hospital sued Ergo Construction, which in turn sought indemnification from Hansen Piping. The supplier, Hansen, raised the limited warranty exclusive remedy language as a defense. A trial court granted summary judgment in favor of Hansen. Ergo Construction appealed, arguing that its common law indemnification claim existed independent of any claim under the sales agreement and was unaffected by the exclusive remedy provision. The Court of Appeals of Tennessee said the exclusive remedy language in the sales agreement was very broad. Under the Uniform Commercial Code, which governs the purchase and sale of good, the express limitation of liquidation of damages is permitted. The language in Hansen's sales agreement was clear. It was prominent and was enforceable against Ergo Construction. Certainly, this ruling places Ergo in a very difficult position of being held liable for damages that were caused by defective pipes supplied by Hansen. However, this is the allocation of risk to which the parties agreed to in the original sales contract, and this court cannot rewrite the parties' contract because its terms later prove to be burdensome. As a note, limitations of liability are common, almost the rule, in purchase order forms and sales agreements. As the case indicates, contractors ignore such language to their own peril. Over the years, I have been surprised by the number of contractors that sign sales agreements or even subcontracts or contracts without reading all of the language involved in the contract, and therefore trusting their fate to the person that actually wrote the contract document. This is a very dangerous practice. We are contractors, and we're bound by the terms and conditions of the contracts we sign, and we need to make sure that we fully understand what we are signing when we sign it. The legal section of the Construction Business Mastery podcast is taken from the Construction Claims Advisor with express permission of WP Publishing. Please check the show notes at www.constructionbusinessmastery.com/podcast, and you will find a very special offer there from WP Publishing in the purchase of the Construction Claims Advisor. I highly recommend this publication to all contractors. It will keep your understanding of legal issues in this industry very sharp. And now for the safety section of the Construction Business Mastery podcast. Buried and overhead power lines put construction workers at risk for electrocution. These power lines are especially hazardous in the construction site because workers constantly use tools and equipment around these power lines, like metal ladders, scaffolding, and other shovels, excavating equipment, and so forth. Under the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA standard, electrical contractors are responsible for the health and safety of employees. Just last month, one electrical contractor was issued a citation by OSHA with two willful and one serious violations, with proposed penalties of $148,000. Two apprentice electricians were working on and around an energized 480-volt electrical distribution panel. An electrical arc flashed and blast occurred. One worker was burned by the accident. Upon investigation, OSHA found out that the panel had not been first de-energized before being worked on. This was the primary cause of the accident. and the contractor failed to comply with the OSHA requirements for de-energizing the panel. Another failure of the company was to provide the workers with personal protective equipment. OSHA defines willful violations as one committed with plain indifference to or intentional disregard for employee safety. The serious citation falls on the fact that the employer failed to provide the proper training on safety-related electrical work and practices. Serious citations are issued when serious physical harm or death is likely to result from hazards about which the employer knew or should have known. The lethal potential of electricity is without doubt a hazard an electrical contractor should have known about. I have always wondered why such companies or employers would wait for one of their workers to be struck down by such a powerful hazard before taking action. In my experience, companies who have been in the industry for years are already knowledgeable in whatever safety measures are needed in their line of work. And I understand why OSHA's penalties are issued to these type of contractors, because they know better and are just too lazy to take the necessary effort to protect their workers. I think it is important to mention here that it is our responsibility to educate our employees on safe working procedures that comply with OSHA standards. And we must accept a zero-tolerance policy for workers that do not work safely. That is our responsibility as a contractor. And now it's time for the Construction Business Mastery Quick Tip. Before I get into the Construction Business Mastery Quick Tip this month, I'd like to mention that most of our listeners are listening to this podcast through iTunes. And I looked the other day and found that we are kind of falling a little bit in the ratings. And I'd like to ask that anyone that is listening to this podcast and does enjoy the content that we're putting out, that you log on to iTunes and give us a rating as to what you think of the podcast, and hopefully we'll get moved back up closer to the top so that other people will be able to find the podcast and enjoy it as much as you are. Since our feature segment this month is dealing with construction estimating, I thought I would bring to light a piece of software that I've been using in my own business for construction takeoffs. It's called PlanSwift, and I have found it to be a very powerful, useful, and very intuitive piece of software to use, and I found that our ability to estimate has increased by about 100% over trying to estimate by hand or just using a simple spreadsheet and trying to take off paper plans. I recommend that if you are looking for an excellent takeoff software package, that you go to our show notes and log on, and you will find a free 14-day trial of PlanSwift there that you can use, and they will actually call and help you through the process of setting it up and demonstrating it for you. As I said, I have found it very useful in our operations. Also, at the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned that I found a marketplace where money doesn't seem to be as big an object as it is out in the regular residential or commercial marketplace. This market is accessible to all general and trades contractors in the marketplace. If you're interested in learning more about this opportunity, please see our show notes at constructionbusinessmastery.com/podcast and click on the link there, send me an email, and I will correspond with you directly on how to take advantage of this very lucrative marketplace. Again, thank you for listening to Construction Business Mastery. And remember, don't hope you will succeed. Plan for success.